contradiction between the sciences, the secular world, and the Jewish religion. It's interesting, in the days of the Tannaim, the early days of the Tannaim, they knew how to derive not only halakha, Jewish law, religious law, from reading in between the lines of the Chumash. All of the Midrash HaKran and Reshes Ben Bez were familiar with it, but they were able to derive scientific information from the Chumash. Information about biology and chemistry and physics, to the extent that they knew. They would read these things in between the lines of the Chumash. And the Talmud tells us in one place that they met the scholars, the philosophers of Athens, and they discussed certain aspects of science with them. And the rabbis, the scholars from Athens, told the rabbis what they were working on, what they're trying to figure out. And the rabbis gave them an answer to their issue based on the Pasuk and Chumash. They figured it out from the Chumash. And the Talmud says that the scholars in Athens later on corroborated that the rabbis were right. In the later years, the rabbis not only did not have the ability to figure out scientific information from the Chumash, they couldn't fully figure out the halakha from the Chumash. So we're left with the halakha as the early Tannaim worked it out, and then the rest we try to elaborate, we ad-lib based on the logic. We no longer know how to use these principles, midosh, atarna, reshes, to figure out things by reading in between the lines. But the early days, that's what the Talmud tells us. Now, the special mitzvah to learn Torah is assumed by most of the rabbinic scholars as only related to Torah. Maimonides is of the opinion that the chemistry, physics, biology, all of this is part of Torah. The Talmud speaks about the importance of studying Maaseh Bereishis and Maaseh Merkava. And the Rambam, Maimonides, understands that Maaseh Bereishis means exactly this. It means all of the whole world of science, and this is all part of Torah. Maimonides' opinion was generally not accepted. We usually assume that studying physics, biology, chemistry, astronomy, this is not a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. We assume that it's essential, because of different reasons, to master these fields. Now, why exactly should it be so essential? So, unlike certain sects among the Catholics, we do not have to take an oath of poverty. The rabbis don't have to take an oath of poverty. If they make the money honestly, kol hakavod, isn't they? So the rabbis were always for education, that everyone should give their child an education so the child will be able to make a living. There's no mitzvah to be poor, to schnorr money from someone else. There's no mitzvah to be wealthy, but every father has an obligation. The Talmud says a father has an obligation to perform a bris milah on his son, and to marry off his daughters, and all the various obligations to perform Pidyon HaBen on his son, then lalam the Torah, to teach his son Torah. And the Tanaim say the father has an obligation to teach his son secular education to the extent that he'll be able to make a decent, honest living. And the rabbis make such a statement that whichever father does not train his child to the extent that he'll be able to make a decent parnosis, ki'ilu, as if the father is teaching the child listius, as if he's teaching the child to become a crook. He's training the child to how he's going to make a living later on. So the father has an obligation to educate the children to the extent that they should be able to make a living. The better they'll be educated, they'll probably be able to make a better living. So this is part of the obligation. The Talmud says, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, that even though on Shabbat one is not permitted to talk about business, to talk about the parnasa, but let's say if the community wants to establish a yeshiva where they're going to teach Torah, they have to make an appeal, and they have to have a meeting, a public meeting, and to discuss what the budget of the yeshiva will be, and how they're going to salary the mechanchim, the administration, or the teachers of the yeshiva. So you're permitted to discuss money matters that are shel dvarim. To discuss these type of money matters on Shabbat, to speak to people how much would they take, how much of a salary would they take to work for the school in order to see if it's feasible. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Talmud that the same is true regarding having secular studies. You're permitted to discuss monetary matters with the members of the community to determine how much it will cost to run a secular department of a school or a secular school. Because that's also a father's obligation, and parents all have an obligation to train the children, to educate the children, that they should be able to make a parnassus. Even on Shabbos, we don't talk about business, we don't talk about parnassus, but the idea of having such an institution and having the children but educated to the extent they can make a living, this is considered the Bar Mitzvah. And this you are allowed to talk about on Shabbos. The question is, what if the person has a Yerusha? The person has the family has a lot of money, and he doesn't have to work for a living. So is there any value in studying secular studies? So the Talmud has an interesting dispute, is recorded in the days of the Talmud. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, that's the famous Tana Reb Shimon, the author of the Zohar. So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was of the opinion based on Psukim and the Chumash. There was an apparent contradiction between two Psukim. There was no third pasuk. Usually when the rabbis have what seems to be a contradiction between two verses in the Bible, so they search for a third verse, a third pasuk that should show how to make peace between the first two psukim. What do you do when you have two psukim that contradict each other, and there is no third pasuk to show how to make a compromise? So this is a dispute in a few areas in the Talmud. Do you have the right to make the compromise on your own? Or do you have to say that you have an alternative, either A or B, but you don't blend in the two together? So this is one of the cases where this dispute appears in the Gemara and the Talmud, that on the one hand there's a pasuk that says we're supposed to learn all day and all night. That's what it sounds like. The pasuk says to Yehoshua, it's not Hamishul Mishin Torah. The Torah says we have a mitzvah to study Torah. In the book of Yeshua, the Rish Baruch Hu tells Yeshua ben Nun, you have a Sefer Torah with you, v'hagisa b'yom v'loyim. So the simple reading of the pasuk sounds like it's commanding Yeshua ben Nun to learn Torah all day and all night. This is a question in the Talmud. So some Tanaim are of the opinion that that wasn't the tzivui, that wasn't an instruction to Yeshua ben Nun. He should learn all day and all night. This was a blessing. Yeshua ben Nun was interested in learning Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave him a blessing. You should be matzliach. You should be able to concentrate on your learning all day and all night. It's a blessing, but it doesn't indicate that that's the nature of the obligation. We're not obligated to learn Torah all day and all night. That's one opinion in the Tanaim. The other opinion in the Tanaim is no, that pasuk of Hagisa is not a blessing. God blesses Yeshua ben Nun that he should succeed in learning Torah all the time, but rather an instruction. The Chumash says you have to learn Torah, and it doesn't say to what extent. So maybe it means like a tefillah. It says in the Torah that uliyavda b'chol levavchem, we recite in Kriyashma every day. We have to serve God with all of our hearts. So the rabbis in the Talmud had a tradition. What is that referring to? How do you serve God with your hearts? You serve God by shaking the lulav, by eating matzah and pesach, by observing Shabbos and kashrus and all of the laws of the Torah. What do you mean a Jew at heart? Uliyavda b'chol levavchem. So the rabbis had a tradition that pasuk is instructing us that we should pray to God. Tefillah is the avodah shebaleich. So the Torah doesn't say how often one is obligated to offer a prayer. So the Rambam understands from the Gemara, whenever the Chumash, whenever the Torah writes that there's an obligation to perform a mitzvah, it doesn't say how often, so it's self-understood that it means once a day, every day. The fact that we offer three tefillot every day, the Davu Shachris, Mincha and Ma'ariv, on Shabbat we offer four tefillot, on Yom Kippur we offer five tefillot, Ne'ilah. This is all midrabbanan, this is all rabbinical. But on a biblical level, the Rambam's opinion is that one is obligated to offer tefillah once a day, every day. Whenever the Chumash writes a mitzvah, and it doesn't say how often one should fulfill that mitzvah, so it's understood once a day, every day. So the same one would have thought over here. It says in the Torah we should study Torah. It doesn't say how often we should study Torah. So one might have understood that it means once a day, every day. You spend 5 minutes a day learning a little Torah, and then you yotze. So the pasuk in Yeshua, this other verse it is in the book of Yeshua, where it modifies the pasuk of the verse. It says, no, the biblical obligation is v'hagisa v'yom v'loyim. Should learn a little bit of Torah every morning, a little bit of Torah every night. Once a day, every day, and once a night, every night. So the rabbis of the Talmud say, okay, if a person davens, if he offers tefillot every day, he davens shachris, he davens ma'ariv every day, so in the middle of shachris, he spends 2 minutes reciting Kriyashma. Middle of Maariv, he spends the same 2 minutes again reciting Kriyashma. So according to one opinion in the Tanaim, he has fulfilled his minimum obligation. He has fulfilled the obligation to learn Torah. He spent a little time every day, once a day every day, once a night every night. He's fulfilled the pasuk that says in Chumash, he should learn Torah based on the modification in the book of Yeshua, once a day every day, once a night every night. And other Tanaim disagree. They say no. V'hagisa b'yom v'loyla is not a blessing that was given to Yeshua, not merely a blessing, it's an instruction. You have to learn Torah by day and by night. And it's not a modification, not that kind of a modification on the pasuk and Chumash that if not for this pasuk in Yeshua, you would have thought that one should learn once a day, every day, a little bit. And now it means once a day, every day, once a night, every night. No, it's to be taken literally. You're supposed to learn Torah all day and all night. How can you take that literally all day and all night? That person has to make a living. That person has to take care of the family. That person is married, has to do things. So the rabbis on this group of rabbis understood what it means is every 3 minutes. Every 3 minutes that a person has, he's obligated to learn all day and all night. He has to sleep a little bit to be healthy. He has to make a living. He has to eat food. He has to take care of his family and so on. But every 3 minutes, the Jew is obligated to learn. So these are the three different opinions that the Talmud quotes regarding this pasuk in the book of Yeshua. How to translate Bahagisa Bo Yom Bavoyla. The first Talmud was of the opinion that Bahagisa Bo Yom is only a blessing that was given to Yeshua. It's not an instruction. The other Tanoim assumed that it's not true. It is a tzivui, and the pasuk in Yeshua modifies the pasuk in Chumash. Means that we're obligated to learn Torah Yom HaLayla. But the Tanoim had a further dispute. What does it mean Yom HaLayla? Does it mean a little bit every day, once a day, every day, once a night, every night? Or does it to be taken literally all day and all night? If you have to learn Torah all day and all night, every 3 minutes of your time, so then there's no time to study any secular studies. Unless those secular studies will be necessary for you to make a parnasa. But we're talking about a person who has money, has a Yerusha. He inherited a lot of money from the family. So he doesn't need the secular education for a parnasa. So the question is he permitted to waste his time on studying secular studies? So this was a big dispute in the days of the Talmud. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the famous Tana Rav Shimon, was of the opinion that a person is obligated to spend all day and all night, every 3 minutes learning Torah. And he sounds like he says, and he shouldn't even spend time preparing himself to study to make a living. That's what the Tana sounds like it is. And the other Tanoim disagree. Rabbi Shmuel disagrees with the Tana Rav Shimon. And he says, no, we have these contradictions, we have the contradictory psukim in the Chumash. One pasuk says that people have to work for a living, one pasuk says you have to learn all day and all night. So it's understood. We make a compromise on our own, and we say you have to make a parnasa, and the rest of the time when you have free time, you learn. So the Talmud points out that historically, many people tried the approach of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, just to learn all day and all night, and not to try even to make a parnasa. And they did not succeed. The rabbis say, Harbi Yosek, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, but like also the other, they were not successful. That's not the program for the masses. And on the other hand, the Talmud records, historically, Harbi Yosek, Rav Shmuel, many followed the route of the Talmud, Rav Shmuel. He says, you have to at least try to make a parnasa, so you're permitted to be mevatel enough time to study whatever secular studies are necessary in order to make a parnasa. And they were successful in life. So the Talmud seems to be saying that we're recommending the view of Rabbi Shmuel, that at least for the sake of earning a livelihood, every father has an obligation to teach his child the secular studies to the extent that he'll be able to make a living. There's a famous problem that was pointed out by the commentaries on the Talmud. The same Tana Rabbi Meir, one of the popular Tana Rabbi Meir, is the one who says that every father has an obligation to train his child to be able to make a living, and if he's not going to train the child, not, in addition to the obligation to teach his son Torah, he has an obligation to teach him to make a parnasa, and whoever doesn't do that is kilo malam de listi, as if he's training his child to become a gangster in the future, to become a crook. The same Tana Rav Meir was quoted later in the same Masechus Kiddushin is saying that as far as educating my son, I would ignore all possibilities of parnasa. I'm only going to teach my son Torah. So the commentaries on the Gemara point out that he was the one, Rav Meir was the one who made this big point of insisting on preparing one's child for making a parnasa. So how come he's the one who says he's only going to teach his child Torah? He's not interested in anything else. So the commentaries on the Gemara explain that they don't think that that's so difficult. There are some people who are cut out for learning. So they're going to make a living in learning. Okay. So Rav Meir says, I would ignore all possibilities of parnasa. My son is cut out for learning. So he says, for my son, I would choose the approach of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. He's cut out for that. But as a program for the masses, Rav Meir would not recommend it. He says, for the masses, for the public, you don't know which child is going to be cut out for learning. So he says, more correct is that if you don't know which way to lead your child, It would be more correct to encourage one's child to get a secular education to prepare them for a panasa later in life. This, however, is not the only consideration that the rabbis had in training their children in secular education, namely that the children will have to get a panasa at some time or another. It's famous, the students of the Vilna Gaon quote in his name that to the extent that a person is lacking in secular knowledge, to that extent he will be lacking in the understanding of Torah. Without a good knowledge of mathematics, without a good knowledge of chemistry, physics, and astronomy, you're going to be missing a lot in Torah. I happen to work for the Orthodox Union in New York City, the OU, in the area of Kashrus. Every week, I'm busy, whole week, Sunday through Thursday. On Fridays, I go to the office of the OU and work on issues of Kashrus. I never took chemistry in college. But we need a chemist to explain what the issues are all about. You cannot pask in a shayla in kashrus if you don't know the food chemistry. And you cannot pask in a shayla in the Hilchos Shabbos, a lot of the issues in the laws of Shabbos, if you don't know physics. You have to understand how all these gadgets work. And you cannot pask in a shayla in medicine. There are many halachas regarding medicine, applying medicine all week long, Shabbos, Yom Tov, and so on, unless you understand the biology very well. So that's the famous statement in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that to the extent that one will be lacking in Torah knowledge, to the extent that one will be lacking in secular studies, one will be lacking in Torah knowledge. There was a very prominent rabbi, you must have heard of him, Shlem Zalman Auerbach, who passed away a few years ago in Eretz Yisrael. So he was one of the major poskim in halacha in recent years. So he never went to university. But as a child, as a teenager, he was always fascinated with books on physics. When he would get his hands on a book on physics, he would read it. They'd tell him the stories in his biography that he was once going on the bus in Yerushalayim, traveling. He used to go to the yeshiva to give shiurim. And the students, some secular students, were complaining that they have an exam, not to him. They were talking amongst themselves that they have an exam in physics and they're bored and they don't find any interest in physics. And he piped up and he said, "You're not interested in physics? It's so fascinating. Why are you not interested in physics?" So that he studied physics. He studied whatever he could get his hands up, but he couldn't have mastered everything. He was busy learning Torah. So whenever a shiloh would come up, a shiloh of banking, so he would ask someone who's an expert in banking to please give him a private lecture for an hour and explain to him the background of the whole issue. He would explain what his shiloh is, and he would ask for the background. Or some shiloh new gadgets, and he would ask some expert in physics to explain the background, or shiloh medicine. So we'd ask an expert doctor to come and explain to him. So they would give him a lecture for an hour. At the end of the lecture, he would ask permission to review what he had learned. So they said that people were always astounded. They were amazed. He could tell them back in 3 minutes, in a more clear fashion, everything that they had said, clearer than the way they told it to him for an hour. He had the ability to grasp, and he felt that he has no right to pass in the shot. If you don't know what you're talking about, so how can you have the mission? An halachic opinion. You have to have all the secular knowledge. But he didn't want to go to university, to graduate school. This is a famous comment that's made by the Nitziv. Nitziv was the Rosh Hashiva in Balozhin. Balozhin was a famous yeshiva that lasted for 90 years. It was founded, I think, in 1801 or something, and it was closed in 1891. So the early years of Balozhin, it was a different ballgame. It was a totally different yeshiva. They were studying Gemara, studying Zohar. Everything was different. It was founded by Rav Chaim Volozhin, the student of the Vilna Gaon. The later years, the Nitziv was the Rosh Yeshiva the last 39 years. Imagine a president of the university for 39 years. And he withstood many revolutions. He was not a direct descendant of Rav Chaim Volozhin. He only married into the family. And there were direct descendants who wanted to dethrone him. And if you've ever seen the pictures of the Nitziv with those glassy eyes, he looks like a holy tzaddik. He doesn't know what's going on in this world. He knew very well what was going on in this world. And he ran the yeshiva the last 39 years. So in the last 39 years, there were many maskilim. There were many young men who really were chalashim to go to university, but there was so much anti-Semitism, so they wouldn't accept them into the university. So the only place that there was any intellectual excitement going on for the Jews, who were, that was open, that was available to them, was in Balozhin yeshiva. So many of these people came to Balozhin. So in between the Siddurim to learn and the Beis HaMidrash, it was well known that all of the students, not only the masculine, even the religious ones, they weren't all going to go into Torah, they weren't all going to become rabbis or teachers in yeshivas. Many of them became businessmen. The nephew of the Nisi, the author of the Torah, Baruch Epstein, was a banker. So he writes it. He studied. He writes in his autobiography. He used to study books. His uncle did it. He wrote the. There's one chapter in his autobiography about his uncle did it. So the uncle didn't want the boys to go to university. He wanted them all to learn in the yeshiva. But he knew that a lot of them would become bankers and businessmen and so on. So he encouraged them that they should all read books on their own, in between, during lunchtime, whatever, before they go to sleep at night. He just didn't want them to organize the secular division of the school. So that was always the practice. They always had the secular studies in the yeshiva. First of all, for the students to be able to prepare for a parnasa, and secondly, even for the sake of paskening shilas. So the Nesiv has the following comment. There is a famous Mishnah at the very end of the Shishi Sidri Mishnah. It's a very cryptic Mishnah, mysterious Mishnah, based on a pasuk in Novi, Lahankam Ohav Ayesh, Votrasehim Amalei. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is that God promises that he's going to give tremendous reward to those who love him. Ohavai, those who love God, will be rewarded. Fine. So the Mishnah has a strange comment that God will, the word Yesh is Yud Shin, the amount is 310. That God will reward those who love him by granting each one of them Shai Olamos, 310 worlds. What are the 310 worlds? What is that supposed to correspond to? So it's very unclear in the Mishnah. So the Nitzin has a long essay where he explains as follows. He says, in order to paskin a shayla in Hilchas Shabbos on the modern technology, you have to know a lot of physics. In order to paskin a shayla on banking, you have to understand the economics, and you have to understand the banking. In order to paskin a shayla in other areas, you have to know chemistry, physics, whatever. So how can a Talmud Chacham paskin any Shabbos? First, he has to get a doctorate in chemistry, and a doctorate in physics, and a doctorate in engineering, in every field. How can a Talmud Chacham paskin anything? So that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, that he'll give the Talmid HaChacham the ability to master. He thinks that maybe the 310 Shai Olamos, maybe the 310 courses that are necessary to know everything that there is to know. He's guessing. He's trying to figure out what is the reward that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give those who love him. The Ohavei Hashem will be rewarded with Shai Olamos. He says maybe the Shai Olamos corresponds to the 310 courses that you have to master, Sach HaKol, to know all there is to know in the world about physics, chemistry, engineering, biology, medicine, and then business, and so on. So this is the way he ran his yeshiva. He thought that even those who were going to turn out to become rabbanim, who will be passing the Shabbos, will also have to read the secular books. Not only his nephew who wanted to become a banker, who went into banking and wrote a book on banking, about Baruch Epstein, But not only the others who went to the secular field, but even those who are going to become rabbanim and balamdim and yeshivas would also need the secular knowledge, like he quotes from the Vilna Gaon, to the extent that one will be lacking in the Chokmas HaElok. The people will be lacking in their full understanding of the Torah. So that's why he not only permitted it, but he encouraged all of the students to study on their own secular studies. And the promise of the Mishnah was that if they really, Ohavi Hashem, if they really love God and they learn the Torah Lashma, that they will succeed, like Rav Shlomo Zalman was a very outstanding example of that. He never took any of these courses, but he read the books on his own. So he succeeded in mastering whenever he needed it. He succeeded in mastering an area without really taking the courses. It's very well known that the Chazon Ish used to give medical advice to people. So they have different biographies of the Chazon Ish. How did the Chazon Ish know all of this? He would recommend, he would draw on a piece of paper, the brain or the heart, and he would recommend to the person who was sick, bring this to the doctor, tell me you should do surgery like this, instead of doing it like that. How did he know all of this? So those who didn't know the Chazon Ish well were guessing. So they said, it was like the Tanoim of old. In the early days of the Tanoim, the Tanoim had the ability to look into the Chumash, and they figured everything out. If you look in the Gemara, so the Chazon Ish studied all the Gemara, and that biology, the Gemara of Chulin, about many animal, to what extent the animal is diseased, that you should declare that it's a trophy, you're not allowed to eat it, and when is it not diseased. And based on what he studied in Gemara, that's how he knew. So someone is about to publish a doctoral dissertation in Eretz Yisrael, very interesting, on the Chazon Ish. So part of his doctoral dissertation is that he interviewed a person who studied with the Chazon Ish off and on, a few hours a day, over the course of 10 years, between the age of 15 and 25. Very interesting. This fellow is a very modern person. He lives in America now. He has a PhD. He didn't. He's not at all the speed of the Chazon Ish. He says when he joined the Israeli army at the age of 25, the Chazon Ish was heartbroken. He thought that he was preparing this young man to become like his nephews, like the Chazon Ish's nephews, who would never join the army at all. And it was a totally different kind of person. But he was close to the Chazon Ish. So he was interviewed. The fellow who wrote this doctoral dissertation interviewed this person. And he discussed with him, how did the Chazon Ish know all of this? He said, what are you talking about? The Chazon Ish didn't figure it out from the Gemara. He said, as a young man in Europe, he used to read every book in Yiddish that was available on biology, medicine, and psychology. That's what he knew very well, these three areas, biology, medicine, and psychology. Many people said, the Chazon Ish would speak to you, people with problems would come to the Chazon Ish, religious, not religious, everyone come to the Chazon Ish. And when he spoke to you, you had the impression that he was not thinking of anything else in the world, he was only concentrating on you. They have in this interview with this fellow, they have other similar stories. They have a story about a non-observant Jew who had some kind of a disease, and the doctor said they can't help him, he's going to die. So the people kept on encouraging him, go ask the Chazon Ish, maybe you'll have a solution for your problem. So he said, what? What does the Chazon Ish know? He's not a doctor. The doctor said there's nothing that can help me. And I'm not religious. Why am I going to go to the Chazon Ish? He's going to throw me out of the house. So he kept on telling him, I'm not going to throw you out of the house. Put on a kippah. And go ask the Chazon Ish. So he finally, after pressuring him so much, he finally went to the Chazon Ish. And he explained what his problem was. The Chazon Ish asked him a few medical questions. Did they do this? Did they do that? So then the Chazon Ish said, go back to the doctors and ask them they should try this, that, and the other. They tried it and didn't help in the fellow by anything. But till the day that he died, he said that Chazon Ish was the only person who was interested in him. He said he paid full attention. He asked all the questions that he should. Why did the doctors ask me all these? Why didn't they try these routes? He said he had the feeling that Chazon Ish was interested in saving his life. He didn't have the feeling that the doctors were interested in saving his life. So the Chazon Ish had this unique ability because he read books on psychology. Okay, it's hard to develop this knack on your own. Used to be books on psychology, Yiddish, whatever was available in Europe before he came to Eretz Yisrael in 1933. And he died there 20 years later, so once he was in Eretz Yisrael, didn't have access to these books anymore. But in Europe, he used to read. And it helped him. All of the rabbanim, in order to be able to pass Mashiach, you have to read, you have to have certain basic knowledge in secular studies in order to pass Mashiach properly. The Navi Yeshaya makes a statement that the Jewish people are supposed to serve as Or Lagoyim, a light unto the nations. The Satircha L'Or Goyim. L'Or Goyim L'Satircha. A light unto the nations. What exactly does that mean? It's not that the Navi Yeshaya came up with a new concept that doesn't appear in the Torah. The rabbis in the Talmud have a tradition that any idea that seems to be a new idea in the Vim or Ksuvim is really to be found in the Chumash as well. This idea appears in the commission of Torah as well. The Pasuk tells us in Parashas Kisavoy, of Halachta V'Drocho, you should go in the ways of God. The Rambam writes this to imitate God. What do you mean to imitate God? It's a little silly. A little girl sometimes imitates being a mommy. So she puts on a big hat, she puts on high-heeled shoes, and she starts screaming at the other children, getting anybody catch. That's her understanding of a mommy. The mommy dresses like a mommy, and to act like a mommy is to scream at the younger children, to beat everybody up. Well, a little boy wants to act like he's imitating a doctor. So he puts on a stethoscope and he makes believe, puts on a white apron, he puts on a stethoscope, he makes believe that he's taking your heartbeat or taking your pressure, whatever, makes believe. It's shaykh, it makes sense to imitate. Someday he may become a doctor, and someday this little girl will probably become a mommy. She'll become a mother, so she's imitating now. What do you mean we're imitating the ways of God? What are we? God is interested in retiring. He needs someone to take over. So what are we imitating the ways of God? So it means, it does mean to imitate God that someday we're going to take over or something. It means that God created all human beings, but Selim Alekim. He created us all with godly midos, with midos of Elokus, and he commanded us for Halachta V'Drocho to preserve those godly midos that are already within us, that are already contained within us. So the next passage in the Chumash says, in Parshas Kisavo, when all the nations of the world will see, Kishem Hashem Nikro Alecha, that you, the Jewish people, have succeeded in preserving you at Tzelem Alekim, the Shem Hashem, the the Tzelem HaNakim that you were created with, you have succeeded in preserving it, the Yaru Mimecha, they will learn from you how to act with Yerushalayim. So the Pasuk in Chumash says the same idea that the Navi Yishayah said. The Navi Yishayah didn't come up with a new idea that the Jews are supposed to serve as an Orla Goyim. The idea appears in the Chumash as well. He's repeating this idea. The Jewish people are supposed to serve as Orla Goyim, a light unto the nations. A light unto the nations in which area? In observing Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras and Mishpacha. What does that have to do with the non-Jews? That's a uniquely Jewish. It has no shaykhus with the non-Jews. He's Orla Goyim in the areas of justice and righteousness and honesty and how to run a country properly and how to run a business properly and how to make a living in a decent fashion and so on and so forth. Decency. Regarding the basic principles of Menschlichkeit. So the Jewish people are supposed to serve as an Orla Goyim, as a light unto all of the nations in this area. So in recent years, there was a big difference between the Jewish communities who lived amongst the Arab nations as opposed to those who lived amongst the Christians. Rashi and the Baalei HaTosafot who lived in Europe, they never studied any secular studies. The non-Jews that they associated with were poshut laborers who were not on such a high level of education. They weren't going to any universities. So what are the Jews going to study secular education? What do they need it for? To the extent that they needed the secular education to figure out the laws of the Torah. So they studied it a little bit, but they didn't see anything more than that. The Jews who lived in the Arab country, the Arabs were all studying secular studies. They were studying physics and astronomy and philosophy and whatever was available. So the Jews used to do the same as the Goyim. The Jews have to serve as an Orla Goyim in that area. We have to be educated in order to show them what's a proper education, how they should educate their children. By the Chachmei Ashkenaz, by Rashi Tosafos, it wasn't Shaykh. What are we going to get educated with? There was no education available to them. It wasn't a secular education. There's nothing to talk about. But the Jews who lived among the Arab nations, they always did. And that's why in recent years, Orthodox Jews are realizing that it's important not only to make a parnasa, not only to be able to understand the Torah properly, to pass the Shabbos properly, to serve as an Orla Goyim. A person has to show that he's a mensch by having a significant amount of secular knowledge. It's interesting in Europe, probably about the beginning of the early years of the 1900s, many years they didn't allow Jews to go to university. So the Jewish response to this anti-Semitism was, well, they have nothing to offer anyway, so we're not losing anything anyway. So, garbage. Nothing to lose. Then when finally a few Jews were allowed to go to university, they were swept off their feet. Parents, our grandparents were telling us all these years that they had nothing to offer. Such a chachma, wow! Physics, everything, chemistry, astronomy, everything, medicine, biology, everything. So many of the people went to university rejected the whole Jewish religion because they saw that they were told lies by their parents and their grandparents. Truth of the matter, the Talmud tells us, commenting on the Pasuk in Echo, it says, when the Jewish people were sent into exile at the time of the destruction of the first temple, so the Pasuk says, Malachel, Sereb, Agoyim, the leaders of the Jewish people were sent into exile, ain't Torah. So the comment is given, there's no Torah, Bagoyim, but there is Chochmah. If someone will tell you that there's Chochmah, Bagoyim, that the non-Jews have developed a lot of Chochmahs, you should believe them. If someone will tell you that the non-Jews have developed a proper system of ethics to determine what's right and what's wrong, that you should not accept. Because we have the Torah tells us what's right and what's wrong. And all of the philosophers and all of the physicians and all the world's greatest chemists and all the world's greatest physicists don't necessarily have the right mahalach, the proper attitude towards determining what's right and what's wrong. That's Torah. Torah means a way to guide your life, what's right and what's wrong. Chachmah just means the secular discipline. So the secular discipline it didn't have. So the religious Jewish reaction to the anti-Semitic attitude of not allowing Jews to go to university for many years was that they have nothing to offer anyway, so we're not losing anything anyway. Then all of a sudden, when they finally let a couple of Jews go to university, so they were swept off their feet, they saw their parents and their grandparents were telling them lies. The lies were against our tradition. Our tradition always had it, that there is Chochmah Bagoyim. The secular world has a lot to offer. Not necessarily in their literature, not necessarily in their poems or their entertainment, entertainment or their movies or other things, the paintings, not necessarily what the Chabad Bible is over there, but in the Chochmah, the area of Chochmah, the science of this area, what to offer. So as the years went by, this was straightened out a little bit, and the religious Jews realized, yes, what the rabbi of the Talmud said, the non-Jewish world, the secular world, has Chochmah. That's certainly true. So the Kedai to take up their Chochmah. In Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately, for many years, the Haredim in Eretz Yisrael were maintaining the attitude from over 100 years ago that it's not worth studying any secular studies from the non-Jews. They have nothing to offer anyway. And in recent years, so therefore, they're not studying these courses and they're not making a living. So they're all coming all over the world to raise money when they marry off their 18 children. They have to go. They don't make a living. It's not shach. They don't make a parnas. Now, in the last couple of years in Eretz Yisrael, things are changing. You have the most Haredishi communities in Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim. They have schools where they're teaching these people computers. They're teaching them sciences, physics. Okay, they're not reading world literature. They're not interested in studying philosophy. It's okay, don't study philosophy. But at least the first step, at least they're studying secular studies to the extent that they'll be able to make a living. Little by little, they'll graduate from that and they'll realize that they not only have to make a living in order to understand Torah better, in order to pass the Shabbos better, they'll have to know the secular knowledge as well. I remember many years ago there was an issue, probably affected you as well, I don't remember which year, 15, 20 years ago, there was an issue, all of the cheeses before Pesach, they realized all the cheeses that were kosher to Pesach were used in some kind of a product that was under the supervision of the OU, and then the rabbanim of the OU said they made a mistake and they think that it may be chametz, that this ingredient may be chametz, and all the kosher Pesach cheeses could be that they weren't really kosher Pesach. So we had a meeting at the office of the OU in New York City. I think the meeting was way before Pesach. All the cheeses were made, I think it was Asar HaTavis. I seem to remember we were all fasting, we got a mincha, we made Kriyas HaTorah, and there was no food served, it was in the kindness. And then we'll be discussing the issue with the kosher and Pesach cheeses. So we had Rabbanim from the OU, the food chemist, who used to work for all the kashrus organizations, for the OU and the Chav K and the Star K and the Eidach Haredis, and all. There was a religious woman, a Yekesh woman, who went with Hashem. And she didn't speak English well, she's a European. So she was explaining chemical background to the Shaykh. So some of the ultra-Orthodox rabbis didn't want to listen to a woman. This woman, we saw she was wearing a shekel, but she's not going to listen to a woman. So one of the rabbis from the OU said it over to them in Yiddish. He was translating in Yiddish, but he was making fun of them also. While he was explaining to them, he's making fun of why they don't listen to the woman. Pay attention, you learn something in chemistry. So you know for next time how to pass in the next shekel. They didn't understand the ABC of the chemistry, so they didn't know how to pass in the shekel. So they finally, after the whole meeting was over, it took a few hours, they were so appreciative. They thanked us for calling the meeting, and they said, please, next time, please let us know more about the chemistry of the food. This is mamish nothing. This is a mashu of a mashu. They said, let us know more about the issue of the chemistry and the food that we able to pass on the Shabbos properly. So at least now, in Eretz Yisrael East, they've reached the first stage. They graduated to the first stage. You have more and more schools in Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak, where they're preparing some of the Haredim with basic, elementary, secular knowledge that they'll need to make a decent parnasa. There's no mitzvah to be poor. That's from a different religion. They mixed up the Catholic, certain sects of the Catholic religion with the Jewish religion. We don't have that in our religion. No altar poverty. The mitzvah, every Jew has to make a parnasa. So that's the first stage. This second stage, we hope we'll graduate, we'll get to the second stage, and the Rabbanim will realize. If you don't fully understand, like Abshleim Zalman says, if you don't fully understand the chemistry, the physics, the biology, whatever, the banking, so you're not entitled to pass the money, like what you're talking about. And in the third stage, that we're very far from that, the third stage that the Jewish people should serve as an Olam Goyim, we should show the non-Jews what is a human being all alike, all about, and what is a Tzelem HaLakim supposed to be like. So unfortunately, the Jews are not respected enough, but we hope the day will come. That will be up to the third stage as well. For many generations of us, that the non-Jews used to respect the Jewish people. As it says in the Chumash, Yichach Masma Vinaskan Deini Hamim, they respected the Jewish scholars for their Torah knowledge as well as their secular knowledge. Unfortunately, now that's not the case. But after we'll overcome the second hurdle, so then we'll have to move on to the third. That we should continue to serve as an orlog like we used to in the days of the Tanakh, used to in the days of the Rishonim. And this seems to be the attitude of the rabbis. It's officially, this was the attitude of the rabbis all along. Unfortunately, due to circumstances, they weren't able to lead their lives like that for many years because it was anti-Semitism. They weren't allowed to go to university. Well, there were no non-Jews who were respectable. There's no one to talk to. But we assume that they will come. They will be coming back to that third step as well. Okay. Maybe if people want to raise some issues or have discussions.
All this discussion is post-school, so to speak, high education, university type level. At what stage is there, what would be the view on, starting from early childhood, that at what stage do you say branch off into learning secular education in the views of the sources that have been quoted, or is it from the most basic of stages?
We have to train our children for any possible eventuality. How do I know whether my child is going to turn out to be a rabbi or not a rabbi? Of course, we have to train the child a little bit Torah, a little bit secular knowledge. Otherwise, it'll be handicapped later. He'll only be able to go into one area, and he may not be successful in that area. Talmud has a fascinating comment. There's a pasuk in Navi which describes God as shedding 3 tears every day. God doesn't cry, doesn't have any tears. It's all an allegory. So what are the 3 tears that he sheds every day? So 2 of the 3 tears are on the misplaced people in life. The person is cut out for learning who went to a secular field. The person is not cut out for learning who went to the rabbinate. And God is crying on the people. If you only give the person one root, you only teach him Torah. And what if he's not cut out for learning Torah? So he'll be a misfit for the rest of his life. If you only train him in secular knowledge, what if he really is cut out for learning Torah? So he'll be a misfit again. So you have to give the children the opportunity to develop in one direction or the other. You have to prepare them for all eventualities in life. All of my children have 9 children. So all of our children have college degrees, and they're all doing very well. So some of them use the college degree, some of them don't use the college degrees. They may in the future use the college degree. We have to prepare them for all possibilities in life.
What's the third tier?
The third tier is unrelated to the people with the background. The third tier is shedding, God sheds a tear for the one who is appointed to a position of leadership on the Jewish people, and he misuses his authority for his own personal aggrandizement. Instead of being a parnas neman alatzibur, he uses it with his robbery alatzibur, unrelated to the first. But the first 2 tiers are on the misplaced people. Usually misplaced people because the parents didn't give them an opportunity to develop in two directions.
And you concentrated on the sciences. You mean to the cultural, like studying Shakespeare, for example. How would your interpretation relate to that?
My personal feeling is that whatever human insights can be found in Shakespeare, and world literature and poetry and so on, can be found in the Midrash. We found all of the ideas in the Midrash. In fact, many of the ideas that are found in world literature are found in Tanakh. You don't have to go to the Midrash. I remember when I was in college, undergraduate, so we were taking courses in British poetry. So we would point out to the professor that many of his ideas come from Tehillim. He showed up Psukim and Tehillim. He wasn't aware. He was a Jewish teacher. His father was a primary rabbi. He was not aware of that. The teacher wasn't religious. He stopped saying Hallel many years before. We showed him many of the themes were in Hallel. And the themes were other Psukim and Tehillim. So many have the attitude that we don't really need the literature, world literature. We have Jewish literature that covers human thought and human insight and so on. Philosophy you won't find in the Talmud. So that's not the truth. Those who are cut out for philosophy, many are not. Those who have a bent for philosophy, so we also. It's a way of looking at the world. It's an outlook. So that's for those who are cut out for that. Let's get that. Not everyone has such a.
um, I'm a very proud Haredi Jew. So I just wanted to ask, I noticed a couple points which I didn't understand in the in your representation of Haredi attitude. First of all, the Chazon Ish you quoted, there's a couple, in my mind, inconsistencies. First of all, the Chazon Ish is well known as the architect, actually, of much of the Haredi world in Israel today and its attitudes. That I know from his Talmidim. So therefore, his own views towards the acquisition of his need to acquire secular knowledge was obviously something which he didn't institute at an institutional level in the land of Israel, nor did the majority of the students of Volozhin who founded the Mir Yeshiva, the Panach Yeshiva, and other places, to portray Volozhin solely or figure largely that it's actually one attitude in Siva and Volozhin. Obviously, there was another stream of thinking in Volozhin because of the Yeshiva world that developed from it. Is actually most of it follows a different view. Sorry, it's a little bit of alternate speak. The other point was that it's also if for example, Shlomo Zalman didn't need an advanced physics degree to be able to write Sefer Moreh, as a Talmid Chacham, could educate himself according to the areas that he needed, can his precedent be really brought as a precedent for the masses of Jews needing to have advanced degrees in these areas in order to be enlightened to the nation. Right? It's hard to bring from the main point a few other points, but nature will stop. It's hard to bring from the Haredi world one actually tries to understand. The other thing is I never perceived in the Haredi world an attitude that there's no chachma in the universities, in the areas of sciences, but rather concerned that because of the great draw of the Parnassa and getting ahead in the secular world, that people will be swept because of social issues, rather than telling them there's absolutely nothing in the chachma sa'olam. It's a staple gemara that you mentioned that everyone learns in the Kiyas even. So the attitude which you portrayed, that the Haredi world having towards Chachmas Mizrahim, is I've never discovered it.
Come to America. Go to any yeshiva in Brooklyn where they make fun of high school studies and forget about college. They all say it's silly, there's nothing to learn. Everybody has that attitude. That's exactly what you pointed out. If the Volozhin closed, then the students from Volozhin founded their own yeshiva, so they didn't encourage anyone to study any secular studies. My impression was that was a heroic shock, because they saw that those who did go to university were so swept off their feet, they gave up the whole Jewish religion. At that time, many of the people who were beginning to go to universities, they gave up observance of everything. So they had to be mechazik. At that time, had to be mechazik Yiddishkeit. So they said that it's Yehari Bal Yaber, it's not allowed to go to university, even if it's only to save your life. So I brought their quotes that once a person was going to be drafted by the army, so he had an option of going to the university, being exempt from the army. So he said, there are times on which he said, you're not allowed. Even to save your life, you're not allowed to go to university. Because at that time, whoever went to university, 99% of them would lose their religious observance. We live in a generation where it's possible to go to university, maintain religious observance, and to learn Torah at the same time. I don't think they would be opposed to it. They would feel that whoever is really cut out for learning should concentrate on his learning. But not, that's not, I'm not calling to think, that's not for the public, that's not for everybody, that's for the Yechidi school. I think you point out that the Chazon Ish and the Shlomo Zalman Roybach did all this study on their own. They were super geniuses. It's not really fair to expect everyone to be able to follow in their footsteps. A super genius is possible to get a lecture for an hour, to pick up all the details and to say it back better than it was presented to them. Chazon Ish also was a genius. He was very brilliant. So he was able to read on his own in Yiddish, put the Dalton together and figure out that this can help other Islamic scientists and which is pretty advanced. But for most people, they won't be able to do this on their own. We see that I'm doing it on their own. We see many of the Rabbanim who don't have the secular background are passing Shalism incorrectly. On the medical issues, there are Shlomo Zalman, Paskins, and Moshe Feinstein Paskin, many Haredi Rabbanim are Paskining not like them because of lack of knowledge. Not because they have a different sheet. Not because they have a different sheet in Havar. Different Rabbanim are entitled to different opinions, but a lot of times the difference in opinions because they're lacking the knowledge of the medicine, the information. That's an obligatory
So, on a practical level, if you had a student who was competent and was an academic, and had the choice, say they've been in a high school that offered Kodesh and Chol, they went off to Yeshiva for a couple of years, they might be now at the age of 18, 19, and they come to approach you, should they be going to university, or continuing for a couple of years in a intense yeshiva environment. What would you suggest to that student?
You have to see if it's cut out for learning in an intense environment. For
I'm saying they are academic, cut off for learning. The person's a learner.
So let him go learn in the yeshiva for a couple of years and then see where his interest is. If it's, a lot of times a boy learns for a couple of years, then he realizes he enjoys it, he loves it, but it's not for him. He's not doing this for the rest of his life. So you have to keep open the possibility of going to university to get an education. And not everyone is cut out for only learning all day and all night. Unfortunately, in Eretz Yisrael, there's a problem with the army. So everyone is drafted unless you're a student in yeshiva. So that forces many Haredim into going into yeshivas. But they're not cut out for learning in yeshiva. So that's why they smoke every day. They're in the base medrash, out of the base medrash, they're about all the other people. The other people would like to learn all day. These guys are schmoozing because they're just not cut out for learning all day, which is really a tragedy. What do you need 500 people in yeshiva? If you would have 100 people, you'd get five times as much money. The other people would be productive to the society. I remember many years ago, the first time we visited Eretz Yisrael, we just came to Eretz Yisrael, so that's my wife is good in Eretz Yisrael. We just lived for 3 weeks. So the first time we visited Eretz Yisrael, so we visited Reb Shmuel Rozovsky, who was a good friend of my father-in-law's, a fellow rabbi from Europe, from Grodno. So we visited him on Shabbos, and he was asking me, how do things run and why you, what's the kollel all about? So I told him, we have a kollel after they finish college and stuff like this. So you give him a year or two, we give written exams. And if they don't do well on the written exams, we tell him, look, brother, you're not cut out for learning. No, maybe you're cut out for the rabbinate, but not to learn the whole day. Go do something else instead. So he was nispal. He said, that's the way it should be in Panovich. He says he's very upset. Why do they allow boys to stay in Panovich forever and ever? Amen. He said, he thought they should leave everybody learn in Panovich at least a year after the Hasana. But then a year after the Hasana, if he doesn't seem to be producing, he's not cut out. So tell him to go get a job. Tell him to go do something else. He was opposed to this system that they encourage everybody to stay and learn in the yeshiva forever. He said, you're just ruining the person. He won't be able to function later on in life. Now they're trying to straighten out the mess. So they're trying to have coach schools that teach computer knowledge or other basic secular knowledge. They should be able to make a living. Not that they should have to learn in yeshiva.
With regards to advanced secular education for women, where does the law stand on that issue?
Depends what the person is cut out for. My three older daughters doctorates. No, my first two daughters have a third daughter is getting a doctorate now. She's doing cancer research. They all live in Eretz Yisrael. They're all doing very well. My next daughter has a master's in education. She teaches in the school. If they cut out for it, good. My next daughter has also a degree in nursing. She's a nurse in Eretz Yisrael. If the girl is interested in that, if she's cut out for it, so fine. You should push anyone into anything that they're not prepared for. Especially women. We would prefer that the women should lead more of a private life. But we live in a world where we're lacking all of that sneeze. Sneeze means to lead a private life. So we would prefer that they should lead more of a private life. Unfortunately, that's not the way the world is running now. So my oldest daughter used to run a bank. Second daughter is a big knocker at IBM Think Tank. But one of them with cancer research, they're all public, they're all public people. Unfortunately, we're not happy about it, that they're so public. We prefer that they would have their positions more privately.
They're working at home.
Some of them are working at home. Okay. But if the girl has got up.
Just to ask him that question about culture and studying the cultures. If I'm not mistaken, Rav Lichtenstein, Rosh Hashiva Gush, his PhD was in, or his master's was in English literature, as a son-in-law of the Rav and a major Talmud of the Rav. Was that frowned upon, or is that there's an attitude like that?
I don't think that necessarily represents Rabbi Soloveitchik. You know, my children don't always represent what I stand for. The Rabbi Soloveitchik's children don't necessarily represent what he stood for. Rabbi Soloveitchik happened to be a super genius. And he had an interest in everything in the world. He was interested. He used to read the New York Times 2 times a day. He used to read in between lines in order to understand what was going on. And the Rabbanu from Eretz Yisrael, he hadn't been in Eretz Yisrael since 1935 when he was a candidate for the Rabbanu from Tel Aviv. So when Rabbanu would visit him in America, he would talk about the political situation there. So he would explain why this member of Knesset said this, why he said that. So we live all in time. How do you know that? He said, he knows other people. He read in the newspapers. He would read in between the lines everything. He was interested in music. He was interested in everything. Yeah, he was a genius. He was interested in everything. And most people are not such geniuses. He didn't begin to go to college till in his 20s. After he had been studied by his father many, many, many years. He didn't start college at the age of 18. Out of college at 25, 26 or so. He was a super genius also. It's not approved anymore. He went to university at a time that it was very dangerous to go to university. At a time that, like, I don't know, 98%, but 90% of the religious Jews went to university, gave up their religious orientation. And he said it was very difficult for him. And he said to his children, for you it's much easier. You already have, the way was already, the path was already made by those who went originally. He said it was very hard for him. His religious identity in college and to learn Torah at the same time. It was a very secular. Berlin was a very decadent city at the time. It was in the center of all of the Tumah in Europe. So I don't know if Rabbi Soloveitchik would have. He used to recommend to the students they should all go. Rabbi Soloveitchik always recommended to the students they should all pursue graduate degrees in secular studies for a different reason. He didn't realize that you can make a living from learning Torah. He didn't think that in America anyone was interested in learning Torah. He gave shiurim and yeshiva, but he didn't think that they would be able to make a living. So he always insisted everyone should go get a secular degree, you got to make a parnas. Then in the later years, he realized, what is he talking about? There's so many people interested in learning Torah. These people can teach Torah all over, and all the yeshivas in America, and all the Kohen and so on. So his attitude changed a little bit about the secular education. But his main encouraging all the people in America, all of the students, to pursue graduate degrees is because of Parnassus.
What was the change?
He saw his own grandson. Yeah. Some of his grandchildren did go to university, others did not. And he was upset why they're not going to university. Then they explained to him, say that. There are a lot of people learning at university. Whatever he didn't read in the newspaper, he didn't know. So he didn't realize that there was a whole revolution going on in America. So many people learning that. You know what I mean? Yeshivas and Kotel and all over the place. And then he realized that. Now it's not necessary. He felt the Shlemus of Adam. He thought that it can die, that everyone should have secular studies. But it has to be in proportion to the Torah knowledge that a person has. A person has to amass, one of the ability to, should amass a lot of Torah knowledge.